Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Before we begin, we would like to thank Six Point Builders for their support of our show. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area.
Welcome to another episode of Revolution Recap, part of the Believe Network. We're coming to you after the New England Revolution fell 4-0 to Club America at Gillette Stadium on Tuesday night. A very, very difficult game for the Revolution, who are all but essentially eliminated from the CONCACAF Champions Cup after this, despite the fact they have to go to Mexico City next week to still play leg two. I'm Sean Donahue, joined today by Greg Johnstone. Greg, how's it going?
You know, Sean, I gotta say, I gotta give the Revolution credit where it's due. I did not think it would be possible to go into 2024 looking forward to watching the Boston Red Sox, but the New England Revolution have done exactly that. So caps off to you, Revs. I'm going to definitely be watching a little bit more of the Boston Red Sox this season. An absolute disaster. It's nice, first thing in the morning, having to relive this absolute just murder of a game. But on the bright side, and I think we'll just announce this now, we probably won't do a podcast next week. I think we can kind of just say that the Revs are out of the Triple C, and next week is probably just going to be a filler game. So we probably will not have an episode due to the timing and just unimportance of that game, because they are, I'll call it, they're out of CCC. They needed probably a multiple goal win just to have a chance to go down. A 4-0 loss is about as bad as it gets. And I'm looking forward to expressing some opinions today, Sean. How are you?
Yeah, I got to say, I was at the game last night, and I am feeling it this morning. I'm getting a little bit too old for the 9 p.m. kickoffs, so I can only imagine what a 10:30 p.m. kickoff would do to me. So yeah, I will not be doing a podcast for that one. I don't think our colleagues are going to want to do it either, but I can safely say I will not be doing that, and we'll do my best to sleep through that game and maybe catch up on it the next day, but 9 p.m. was rough. But before we do jump into it, I do want to take a moment to mention some sad news I learned this past weekend, which is the passing of Tony Biscaya, a member of the Midnight Riders, one of the first Revs independent media members. He started RevsNet back, I think, in 96 when the team was starting, maybe even 95. Really the first independent site covering the Revolution. Covered the Revs for many, many years. He started the careers of many writers covering the team. I know Brian O'Connell got a start with that site. Julian Cardillo got a start with Breakers Net, which was Tony also ran, covering the Boston Breakers. And he was just a big part for me of, you know, introducing me to the team when I first started covering them, kind of took me under his wing and introduced me to everybody. He introduced me to Brian eventually, who was a big part of the show, introduced me to Jim Dow, who was a regular guest on the show back in the day. And Tony was actually the first ever guest co-host of the show and joined me many, many times on the show. So great guy. Very sad to learn of his passing over the weekend. Very sad. My thoughts and prayers go to his family and the Midnight Riders and all of his friends. So I had to start with that. Very, very sad to have learned that news over this past weekend. Before we jump into the rest of the show, I do want to mention our sponsor, BetOnline. It's down to the last four teams. BetOnline has been your tournament bracket headquarters all March long, and now that we're almost down to the finals, we've still got a lot more in store. MLB is here, and the NBA, NHL playoffs are around the corners. As always, BetOnline is the number one source for your summer sports wagering. Head to BetOnline today and stay updated on all the action. And remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Let's jump right into our key takeaways, which are brought to you by our friends at the Rebellion Supporters Group. Be sure to check them out on Twitter at AnyRebellion and on their website, AnyRebellion.org. Greg, what is your key takeaway from this blowout loss?
I know some questions came in on this, but I'm just going to start out coming out hot. We need to have a conversation about Caleb Porter. We've talked a lot about around the time of his hiring. Just to summarize kind of our thoughts, at first we said, well, this is a boom or bust hire. And then as time went on, I grew a little sympathetic to Porter because he's put in a very bad situation. Obviously, there was all that locker room turmoil at the end of last year. He certainly did not have a lot of influence on this roster. The roster is pretty much set when he was hired. It's basically the same roster from last year. And as time has gone on, there's been kind of an evolving debate on social media if this is Anolfo's fault, if this is Porter's fault. And I think there's a lot of blame pie to go around. But if we can just zone in on Caleb Porter, and I know I mentioned this during the bye week shenanigans podcast, but you know, Clint PA has a better record than Caleb Porter right now with essentially the same roster. And we are already getting into the head scratching decision making, segment of a coach's, tenure, which usually doesn't come until a little bit later on when they seem to be kind of throwing stuff at the wall. I don't have any idea what the plan was here. The Revs came out with a 5-man back line. I guess it was supposed to be kind of a 3-5-2, on offense. I know Caleb Porter made a comment about how he was, it sounded like he was expecting me, the wingbacks, to kind of push up a little higher and not let America push, you know, bring the ball through the midfield as much as they did. It kind of just ended up being a 5-3-2. But this is a game where you had a week and a half off. Club America is, you know, on short rest. They've traveled from Mexico City to New England. You need to win the first leg by multiple goals if you have any chance of moving on the CCC. And the Revs not only mix up their formation and play something that they haven't done at all, which is kind of an interesting time to do that, but you also do it where you come out very flat, very defensive. It seemed like they were parking the bus, and maybe that wasn't the intention, but they weren't parking the bus and they weren't playing super defensive, but they had zero offensive momentum. The personnel decisions were interesting. I'm not really sure what the expected result was supposed to be or what it was supposed to look like in Caleb Porter's mind, but this is a game where every now and then you, and we got this in the Brad Friedel era, this lineup struck me as end of Brad Friedel era-ish, where you get the lineup and it's kind of weird and you see something weird, like, oh, Zach Haribou is playing right back. Oh, Luis Caicedo is playing right back. Kind of like, I don't know how that is going to work. And well, maybe we'll see how it plays out. And then it plays out and it goes just as poorly as you expected. I don't really understand what the game plan was here from Caleb Porter. And I think it's, I don't want to call for heads this soon in his tenure. I certainly think he's going to get a few more months, but I have some severe doubts over Caleb Porter and if he's going to work out in New England. And this was a really big moment for him. And I don't think there were many paths for the Revs to advance in CCC. I certainly don't want to come across that way, but the lineup and the end result here, very confusing and some very poor decisions going into this game. And I personally, looking back on it with hindsight, it certainly feels like this game was over really at the start based on how they came out and how they decided to play.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you slightly on that. I think I get what he was trying to do, but at the same time, I think it was a gross kind of, you know, overthinking of what to do with this team. So I think the goal was to put the three center backs out there and kind of counter the three forwards that Club America was playing and then help the wing backs push up more. And that's really not how it played out. Like you said, especially to start the game, it played as more like a 5-man back line, very defensive, because the Revs couldn't control the ball. So I think the thought process was, you know, what we're doing hasn't been working this season anyways. Let's try to get three center backs out there, kind of lock down those forwards, push the wing backs up further. You know, Ryan Spalding's been, you know, showing decent skills attacking wise for this team and do that. It just didn't work out. With that said, I think that was a huge mistake. I think the strength of this team offensively is the wings. You know, you see what Chonklai can do on the wings. You see what Esmer can do on the wings, and by kind of pushing him centrally, that didn't make a lot of sense. By having kind of Nacho as part of your middle three, that didn't make sense to me. You know, so I think I understand his thought process. I just think he way overthought this one. And when you're at home, you know, even when you're against a really good team like Club America, the only way the Revs were going to advance out of this, like you said, was to win this game and to win this game by multiple goals. And that was not a formation that was ever going to win this game by multiple goals. They should have played to their strengths, continue to play the 4-2-3-1, whatever you want to call it, and play to their strong wingers and see what happens. And, you know, maybe you lose this game, you know, 4-1 still, or I don't know. I think there's no way the Revs advance out of this two-game series regardless, but, you know, at least give yourself a fighting chance and go out swinging. I don't think they did that. So I think I can see what Porter was thinking, but I think he way overthought this and got too much in his own head and took away what the Revs are best at.
What is the argument for playing Nacho Heal in that spot as opposed to Ian Harkes?
That part makes no sense to me. That one I can't defend.
I mean, I struggle, and I'm just very clueless to what the going into this game, because I went on the Eagle Eye podcast for Club America. Shout out to those guys. And we previewed this game, and I said, you know, there's really not a lot of paths here, but the Revs, you know, there was an article Tom Pinzoni had on the Blazing Musket, and he said the Revs are third in touches in MLS, but they're 21st in getting touches in the opposition's box, which I thought was a very telling stat that they've really struggled in getting inside the 18-yard box. And so, you know, we kind of talked about it, and I said, you know, the Revs may come out, try to control possession, but they need to take chances in the box, whether that's through direct play, some route one play, or if they just need to do dangerous through balls, because they're not great in the air, which seems to be Club America's downfall. That seems to be kind of their weakness defensively, and we actually saw it a little bit at the end there with Thomas Shankly whipping in balls and the Revs coming close to actually scoring. But I just don't know what offensively they were expecting. Because, again, you need at least two goals in this game. By taking out a midfielder and putting it on the back line, you're essentially – I just don't understand where they thought the goals were going to come from in this game. Because Rioni is way too slow up top. I'm just very bewildered at what exactly the game plan was. The only thing I could – one thing I'll add to is that there were two subs in the 60th minute where Esmer came on for Nacho and then Marc-Anthony K came on for Kessler, and they kind of went back to that 4-2-3-1 and they actually played better. I wonder if there was kind of a, I don't want to say park the bus element, but play defensively, don't let them break lines easily, kind of keep it 0-0 as long as you want. And then the last 30, 35 minutes, we will bring in some subs, we will shift the formation, and then we will really attack a Club America who is missing some players, you know, have some injuries. Maybe we can kind of hit them when there are some tired legs. Maybe that is kind of where he was going, but the way they lined up, it just, none of this made sense to me.
They really didn't muster anything in the way of attack either, you know, until they made that shift in formation. I was looking at the second half, and I think it was, you know, 70 minutes in, they didn't have a shot in the second half. And then they finally, you know, late in the game, actually showed some life. They had ended up finished the second half with 8 shots. After, you know, pretty much doing nothing for most of the game. So they did have more impact in that formation. At the same time, Club America probably had taken their foot off the gas a little bit because they were up 3-0. I'm sure that played a role as well. But yeah, I mean, it was just a dire and depressing, depressing match for the Revolution. My takeaway is, you know, a little bit different, is just that the Revs were completely outclassed in this game by a far superior opponent. I think when you look at this matchup, you had the last place team in MLS against the best team in Liga MX, first place currently, most storied franchise in Liga MX. I think it was always going to be a very, very tough haul for the Revolution. I don't think there was, you know, in hindsight, I don't think there was ever a chance that the Revolution won over two legs. Certainly didn't have to be as bad as it was in this game, but, you know, you could see the difference in class between these two teams. It was just a completely different level from Club America. And to be honest, watching this game, I know, you know, Inter Miami is the favorite to win this whole tournament. I think they're going to have a hard time beating this Club America team. I don't know that I would pick Inter Miami to beat this Club America team. They're just at another level, I think, for most MLS teams. And you certainly saw that against the Revolution. Again, I'm not making excuses for a 4-0 loss, but I think any MLS team is going to have a very, very difficult time beating this Club America side.
Yeah, and I did lock into some 4-1 futures on Club America. So I am with you on that one, too. I know Miami is dealing with a little bit of injuries, and I think Inter Miami, especially in the betting markets, is just very much overrated in terms of futures, MLS Cup futures. You know, I think Leo Messi is you know, easily the favorite to be the leading goal scorer in MLS, and looks like Luis Suarez might actually score more than him this year. I agree with everything you said there. And, you know, I also want to say, and I know we're going to get into this a little bit later, but like, it really shouldn't be this bad. I mean, if the Revs are the worst team in MLS, yeah, sure. Maybe a 4-0 result at home is fine. But you look at the other game that happened last night, Tigres and Columbus Crew. Columbus Crew is a strong Eastern Conference side. Tigres is a top of the table Liga MX team. That was a 1-1 game. The Crew certainly gave them a fight. They didn't seem to roll over. So there should have been some, you know, this should have been a respectable game. It's easy to kind of play hindsight now where you say, of course, you know, the Revs are bad this year. And yeah, of course they're going to get smashed. But, you know, the betting markets had this as a 50-50 game. If Club America was going to come in and win, they were plus 105, plus 110. So they were a little under 50% if they were going to win straight up. And again, the Revs had a week and a half of rest. there's really no reason they should have gotten beaten this badly. You can say, yeah, there's no way they're going to win over two legs, but this should have been respectable. And the fact that it wasn't is pretty appalling, to be honest with you. And I don't think the Revolution will do this, but this is a game that, you know, if you're a season ticket holder and you went to this game, like, the team should be refunding your ticket. I mean, it was truly embarrassing for them to have that this result, this bad of a result in this competition. It's pretty poor.
Yeah, I will say Tigres, and again, we don't have Club America facing other MLS teams to compare it to. Tigres, I think, was probably outplayed by Orlando on the road. They got a draw with Orlando. I think they could have lost that game. They probably outplayed Vancouver, but they drew that game. And then I think the Crew probably outplayed Tigres for much of this game until they got a red card. I don't think Tigres is quite as good as Club America. They did lose to them 2-0 recently. But with that said, there is no reason it should have been a 4-0 blowout. The Revs should have been more competitive in this match. You know, if you told me they were going to lose 4-0 in Azteca, you know, okay, that wouldn't have surprised me. I probably would have predicted that. But I did not think they were going. I know I texted you kind of jokingly during the game. Like, I thought the 6-0 loss was going to be at Azteca, not at Gillette. But yeah, so I they're clearly a better team than the Revolution. I think, you know, if the Revs play Club America 10 times out of 10, Club America is winning at least 9 of those, but it didn't have to be a 4-0 blowout.
but one other thing too is that, you know, they just played Atletico San Luis last weekend, right? We played them last year. We smoked them 5-1 in Gillette, right? It was a 2-1 game. It was a pretty competitive game last weekend for Club America. And then also, if you want to look at Champions Cup results, right? You know, Club America, first round, they played the, I believe, the Nicaraguan juggernaut Real Esteli FC, and they lost. They lost 2-1. And certainly they actually, if you look at kind of
the metrics,
they
did play their B team in that game, essentially. So
you say they play the B team, but they played Quiñones. They played Zendaya. I'm going to mispronounce a lot of names here, but Malagón played. They played 4 or 5 starters in this game. And then if you look at the bench, a number of players, Diego Valdez came in, Fidalgo came in, Reyes came in. Those are guys that played in this game last night. There was some overlap between these teams. So even if it's a B team, and I will also add that if you look in kind of the underlying numbers, the Revs had more shots, they had more possession than Real Esteli FC, but it's not unrealistic to make this game respectable. You know what I mean? Like, a 4-0 game, this scoreline should... Two things are true. Like, it's not a total shock that they lost, but it is a shock in how they lost and how they didn't look like they even belonged on the same field. Because other teams that are, you know, on the same level of the Revs or weaker than the Revolution have played Club America, and they've played them better. So I don't think they're... Some people, I don't want to say, are giving them a pass, but they're like, yeah, this was the expected result. You still should be mad about this result. This was a very poor result.
Oh yeah, I don't want to take that away. I completely agree. It shouldn't have been 4-0. The Revs should have made this a lot more of a respectable game. If this was a 1-1 draw or something like that, or even a 1-0 loss, say okay, they got beat by a better team. But to lose this way at home is embarrassing.
I'm not talking about you, but I saw a tweet this morning, and I won't say who. Out of respect for this person, because it's someone I like very much, but they said, I was expecting it to be worse. Why were you expecting this to be worse? Like, I know the Revs are in poor form, but like, if you were expecting a 6 or 7-0 loss, like, man, like, I mean, we're really talking about the Revs being arguably one of the worst teams in MLS, if that's what you're expecting, because MLS teams should be giving a fight to Mexican teams in this competition. Absolutely. And anyway. Let's get to listener questions. I'm getting mad.
Yes, we do have a lot of listener questions, so we should jump to those. Our listener questions today are brought to you by Subcheck Law. You can find Subcheck Law's website in the show notes. We have 28 listener questions today, Greg. You know, I didn't know how many people were going to stay up to watch this game. Based on how many questions we got, the answer is a lot. Let's start with a winner here. Charles Maddox wants to know, when do we bring the paper bags out?
Do it now. Put away the boxes, bring out the paper bags. I say right about now. Certainly, if you go down to Mexico City, you got to bring a paper bag with you. Soon. I don't want to take too much away because, you know, maybe, you know, it's a tough team. Obviously, you know, it's one game. It's kind of like the Atlanta game. Like, yeah, like, you got your ass kicked. There's probably some momentum that makes, you know, it worse. You know, if Club America too wins this game 2-0, if they're able to hold off those last two goals, Earl Edwards botched that third goal horrifically. And then the fourth goal just seemed like, you know, the Revs had kind of stopped playing. So, you know, if this is 2-0, maybe we have a little bit different of a conversation. But, yeah, I mean, it just seems like there's a spiraling effect downward right now. And Charlotte at home, if we don't win, you know, if we're having two back-to-back league games where we can't beat Chicago and Charlotte at home in back-to-back games, major, major questions coming up here. So, yeah, get those bags ready.
Derek Terrell says, will Vrioni have more cards or goals in all competitions at the end of the year? I miss Gustavo.
You know, that actually is a really good question. And he's been getting very, very aggressive. Not only was there that fight that he probably should have gotten a red card. I don't know why. I believe it was Martin. I don't know why Martin got a yellow on that. I mean, basically a player just falls on Vrioni. Vrioni gets up. First off, he holds his leg. That's a yellow. Then he gets up and then shoves his face. That's another yellow. They ended up both getting yellows. I don't know why. But Vrioni seems to be playing with more of an edge. And certainly at times that's coming across as better effort, more individual effort. But he certainly is very aggressive. And I wouldn't be shocked if we see another kind of stupid red later on in the year. But truth be told, between cards, I don't know what the current count is. I mean, goals, he only has two, right? He has at least two cards. I honestly think he may end up with more cards than goals this year. I think that's a really good prop bet to take. But I'd be putting my money on cards.
Yeah, what, he's got two cards in MLS, two yellow cards in MLS. And then he's got, I think, three and CONCACAF Champions Cup, right? Yeah, he's got three in CONCACAF Champions Cup. So
I didn't realize it was that much of a difference. So yeah, I'd say cards is probably a minus 250 favorite at this point. I mean, they're the overwhelming favorite.
Yeah, he's the 5-2 edge. So
yeah, yeah. You know what? We have the goal scorer draft every year. Maybe next year we should do like the card draft. Like, that'll be a separate episode where we draft players and see who can get the most cards. Because Vrioni, that, you know, I know Caleb Pongratz has taken Vrioni first in the last 2 years. If you took Vrioni in the card draft, I mean, he'd be killing it.
Yeah, and you probably wouldn't have taken him that early, right? I mean, in hindsight, you would have. No. But I think the fact that you don't think a striker is going to be the guy getting all your cards.
Yeah, great value. First time Vrioni's provided great value for the Revs.
Traeger on Twitter says, what is the scoreline if the Revs forfeit the second leg? If they have any respect for this, for the tournament, they'll save everyone the waste of showing up. Then again, it's not like they showed up tonight. I think I looked this up last year or 2 years ago when the Revs were playing Cavalli and they were trying to figure out if they couldn't travel to the U.S., what would happen. I think a forfeit's a 3-0 loss. So that, you know, that would probably be more respectable than the actual scoreline.
Yeah, although I imagine there is some sort of fine you would have to pay because obviously that's a lost revenue for the home team. They will go down there, I imagine. The one nice thing about this is that, one, a lot of Revs fans don't need to stay up for this ridiculous 10:30 p.m. start time, so old men like you and me, Sean, can get a little more shut-eye and go to bed before the second half kicks off, probably. But two, they can actually play some young players. They can play some rotated pieces and you know, go down there. Whatever happens, happens, and then you come back up, and hopefully your designated players and your key players are rested going into MLS, which is now what you need to focus on.
Yeah, might see Tommy McNamara get his first and maybe only start of the season.
Poor Tommy Mac.
Porter on Twitter says, down three goals at home, and Caleb Porter takes off Vrioni for Bobby Wood that hasn't played competitive minutes this year. Is this the last we've seen of Vrioni in a Rev shirt?
No, they're stuck with him. I mean, he occupies a designated player spot. They don't have a buyout, unfortunately. So unless the rules change and MLS adds another buyout for midseason, he's can't be bought out. I don't know. Even if you offered him to teams for free, I don't know who's taking him on at his current salary. And maybe there's a team in Europe. Maybe you could loan him out, similar to what they did with Jozy Altidore a few years ago. But truth be told, they seem to be pretty stuck with him. So we might see him on the bench more than we will. The odds of him going to the bench are a lot higher than him transferring out. But the other thing, too, is there's just no striker depth. I mean, Bobby Wood may, you know, if he gets healthy, I assume we will see him take the starter role similar to how we did last year. But there's no one else. There's two strikers. So even if they go out and get someone new, you know, I think he's buried on the depth chart. That's kind of the best case scenario for the Revs in terms of getting him off the field.
Yeah, and I also don't read anything into that sub, right? They took Carles Hill off at the same time. This was a, you know, this game is lost. Let's preserve some guys that we need for the weekend. So if anything, taking him out of this game to me is implies that he's still part of the plans, right? Like, you know, you don't take Carles Hill off in a 3-0 game if you think you still have a chance. At least that's how I look at it.
Yes.
And Bobby Wood, too. I don't, like, even if he gets relatively healthy with his knee problems, I don't think he could be an everyday starter. So until you bring someone else in, I think Vione's going to keep playing. And, you know, even if Bobby Wood does get healthy enough to take more of his minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Paulo S. on Twitter says, how bad does Polster have to play to get benched? Has anyone on the team with the most turnovers turned it over more than Polster? Maybe Harks and Buck in the middle.
Yeah, Polster, you know, if you look at his underlying numbers, he actually didn't play horrible. Apparently he was 5 for 9 on ground duels, 90% pass accuracy, 7 recoveries, 3 interceptions, 4 for 4 on tackles won. These numbers are according to FootMob. But the eye test tells a very different story. He had some pretty bad moments. I mean, at one point in the first half, I believe it was in the first half, he's just holding the ball and someone just runs up from behind him and takes the ball off his feet. And you can kind of see from his reaction, you can't believe he did that. Not a great game from Polster. Certainly not the player I think we saw 3 years ago. I think he's just lost a step, and he just needs a little bit of help in that defensive midfield. And certainly when you're up against a superior opponent, you know, this was a game he really needed to step up, and he really didn't. So the other thing, too, I'll mention about Polster is that, I mean, what, 20 seconds into the game, he pulls down a player, you know, by his shoulder and doesn't get a yellow for that, gets yellowed 20 minutes later. So, I mean, he was destined to get a yellow card pretty early in this game. And, you know, for a key, you know, defensive midfielder, getting a yellow card against a tough opponent that early in the game, I mean, that could have been disastrous if he ended up getting a second one at some point. So, yeah, a poor game for Polster. What does it take to get benched? It really shouldn't take a ton if his poor play continues. But, you know, I guess there's Mark Anthony Kay there. It seems like Porter is a Polster fan. So I'm curious to see if this poor form continues, and if they maybe go to K at some stage, or maybe they try Buck as a defensive midfielder. I don't know, but they should. They have enough pieces there that they should rotate someone else and give him a chance if his poor form continues. But I think yesterday was more just an off night for Polster against a really, you know, with bad tactics and a really good team. So I'm not sounding the alarm bells on Polster just yet.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts on this one. First, I agree with you. This was a terrible game for just about everybody. So I think he does get a little bit of a pass there. With that said, he hasn't been as good this year. I think the point that, you know, this is a different Polster than what we saw, you know, 2-3 years ago is 100% correct. And that's a problem. But it was a weird formation. He didn't have a midfield partner. And the other problem is, you know, you talk about Polster's turnovers, which were bad last night and, you know, have been bad at times this season. But if you look at Polster as a six, which he is, and you look at maybe Kay as a six, you know, if you're thinking of taking your six out and replacing him with another six, you're probably replacing him with Kay. And Kay is worse at turnovers than Matt Polster. Kay came into this game and 20 seconds later had a bad turnover. So, you know, it's part of it's options, right? I like the Harks and Buck shout. I think, you know, those might be your two best central midfielders, but I think with either of them, you're losing some bite in midfield, right? I don't know that either of them really is a six. And I also don't know that Buck's been playing particularly well this year. So, you know, part of it is none of the other guys have stepped up. Harks maybe, you know, has been pretty good, but between Buck and Kay, I'm not sure either of them are, you know, really pushing to start over Polster at this point with how they've played. So yeah, maybe it does take more than it should to bench Polster because the other options aren't really there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have a lot of options and none of them are great.
Yeah.
Story of the 2024 Revs.
Chris Subchuck says, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Chris, I appreciate you implying a swear without actually doing one, so we don't need the explicit rating. So thank you, Chris. James Casella on Twitter says, where is rock bottom?
Ooh, good question. This brings me back to the Friedel days, where we debated if the Friedel era was as bad as it was 2011. I mean, we're getting close, aren't we? Because I think, you know, as much as some people don't want to talk about it, you know, this is a carryover from last year, and until the Revs start to win, we're still in that post arena, you know, funk. So, I mean, getting embarrassed here in the Triple C is certainly not good. I think rock bottom. I mean, if they win the Wooden Spoon, this arguably is the worst season in franchise history. I mean, with the expectations coming in, with this current roster, with the talent, and with how you ended last year, I think if you're Wooden Spoon, or even if you finish last in the East, even if your win percentage is a little higher, I think that's rock bottom for this franchise.
Yeah, and people point to the 2001 season for the Revolution, which was, you know, a pretty terrible one, but I always go back to that one, and they kind of saved themselves that season by making a run to the U.S. Open Cup final, which, you know, they won't be doing this year. So, you know, I think if they win the Wooden Spoon this year, it certainly is rock bottom, and they're well on their way to doing so. Jose Francino Dino on Twitter says, looking at the graph of how Porter has been running this team, we're currently 2 to 3 weeks out from him saying the players need to fight fans in the parking lot. That's a Brad Friedel reference if you didn't get it. I'm sure everyone that listens did, though. I'll be shocked if he makes it through the summer at this rate. So my question is, what other coaching choices could we bring in halfway through the season? As wild as it sounds, could we bring Bruce back? He just got reinstated, and all it would take is to fire the chief baloney officer, Anolfo. You kill two birds with one stone, or with somebody like Savarese or even Shari, since it seemed like he was being groomed along the lines of what we could get. Well, first of all, I don't think Bruce has technically been reinstated yet. At least we haven't heard that, right? There was an article that said he was, and then there was another article that said he wasn't, but he probably would be, right? Has anything changed?
Yeah, I believe it was actually reported by multiple people that Bruce wasn't reinstated. I believe it was Tom Quinlan, and then there was, I forget it, someone at Fox Sports. I apologize for forgetting the name. And then Tom Bogart of The Athletic reported that Bruce hasn't been reinstated. So I imagine it's maybe somewhere in the middle where he's on track to be reinstated, but he hasn't. And that was also a couple of months ago, so maybe he has been reinstated. Unless there is something that I missed, which maybe that is the case. So if that's the case, if one of our listeners wants to send in something more recent than the Tom Bogart article, you can. So there's a lot of confusion on that, on whether or not he has been reinstated. Regardless, though, Bruce is not coming back. And again, he resigned from the Revolution. There's two ways to look at it. Either he was forced out, or he had no faith in that he had the support from the organization and he resigned. Either one of those cases, and the official line is he resigned, by the way. So, but in either one of those cases, Bolello's got to go and Alfo's got to go. Probably a lot of those coaches that are still there got to go. You don't want to put him back into a bad situation, a toxic situation where there is not a lot of trust, because you had that situation even last year with Bruce. It seems like there was a lot of turmoil between Richie Williams and some others, and it seemed like there was a lot of disagreement throughout the organization, and you know, it led to a mini implosion. So Bruce isn't coming back. In terms of Shalri too, I think the fact that he walked out on the team and resigned is not a good look for him. I know a lot of people like Shalri. He's been on our show. We like Shalri as a player and as a coach, and we wish him well. I do not think he will ever be employed by the New England Revolution ever again. I think that decision was made by him when he resigned. Savarese is a good shout. I assume if Porter goes and we are making kind of a clean coaching change, Anolfo and Bolello are still here, which we can debate that if that should be happening, but let's assume they are. I think they go for another MLS head coach experience guy, which is probably, I would say, Robin Fraser or Savarese or someone along those lines. Probably the same short list that we had last offseason. So what I would like to see, though, if Porter does not work out, and it's not Gio Savarese, I wouldn't be opposed to maybe looking at a top assistant. I don't know what the likelihoods of, you know, grabbing a top assistant from another team throughout MLS. But I think maybe you find a guy that works well with youth, that is a kind of a rising star, and maybe you're looking for the next Pat Noonan or Wilfred Nancy instead of someone who won MLS Cup 5 or 10 years ago. I think maybe for the Revolution, maybe you should start looking into that and kind of go the opposite route that you did with Caleb Porter in this last offseason, if he is gone by, you know, this summer, which maybe, I mean, at this point, you know, if we're in last place in the summer, yeah, maybe. I think that's, well, a very good possibility happening.
Yeah, and it's I guess, worth a reminder that Brad Friedel, you know, he was given a full season, but his second season, he was fired with the Revolution 2-8-2, so 12 games in, they were in last place, and Bruce Arena turned the team around that season and got into the playoffs. So there is always hope in MLS where, you know, 70% of the teams or whatever make the playoffs, that you can turn things around and make something of the season. And then the Revs, you know, did decently well in the playoffs of that year. So, yeah, I mean, I think it is going to be a situation, or it's going to take a situation where the Revolution are in last place, you know, 12 games in, to maybe consider firing Caleb Porter. And then I think you are in a situation where your options for who to hire might be limited at that time. You know, the Revs had Bruce Arena, who was, you know, out of a job and available. You know, you look at who's out of a job and available. Gio Savarese is still out of a job and available. I think that's a, you know, a realistic hire if they were to go away from Caleb Porter. I don't know that he's the guy that turns the season around and gets them to the playoffs. You know, Jesse Marsh, if you want to swing higher, is still available. I personally think Jesse Marsh is an overrated coach and wouldn't be the best hire for the Revs. You know, despite some of the places he's coached, that I think he doesn't know how to do much other than a very high pressing system, which I don't know that necessarily suits the roster the Revolution have. So, you know, there's that. But you know, otherwise, are you prying somebody away that's currently in a coaching job? I don't know. Is you know, I think Bob Bradley's still signed with his team. You know, if you wanted to do something like a Bruce Arena, that would be, you know, a Bob Bradley that could, you know, potentially do both roles. Didn't work out well in Toronto, but that doesn't necessarily mean it wouldn't work out here if the Revolution were to kind of go the Bruce Arena route and hire Bob Bradley. So, you know, it's becoming more and more a possibility, I think, that the Revs do have to move on from Caleb Porter this summer. And if they do, I don't know if the coach is out there that realistically the Revs could get that turns this thing around this season.
You know, Bob Bradley's other son is already on the Revs, so it might work out there, you know, if we wanted to recruit him over from whatever, the Norwegian second division or whatever he's coaching in now. But the one thing I'll add about, I agree with everything you said, but the one thing I'll say, and it might be Porter's saving grace, as you mentioned, it's really easy to make the playoffs, and, you know, you can kind of get to midseason in last place and still make the team. Sporting Kansas City last year was arguably the worst team in MLS throughout the first half of the season, and they end up making the playoffs, and they end up knocking out St. Louis City. So I think that, you know, the fact that there is kind of a long timeline until you need to make decisions, it's not like in Europe where there's a major difference between finishing third in the Premier League and sixth in the Premier League and versus ninth in the Premier League, where every single game matters. And, you know, if you're Wayne Rooney, you get fired after whatever it is, 10 games. You know, it's different here in MLS where, you know, you have a few months to figure it out. And I think Caleb Porter, you know, is going to, that it's probably an argument for him that, hey, I just got here, we have time, you know, let's see it out. Because I don't know who they're going to be able to get in the middle of the year. I mean, Bob, I don't know if Bob Bradley is an upgrade. I mean, Savarese, I don't know. Who's an upgrade over Caleb Porter that's realistic? Like, I don't know. Like, maybe Jesse Marsh, but I just don't know. I think Porter has a little bit of wiggle room here to turn it around. But yeah, if they're in last place in the summer, I think we need to have real conversations about it.
Yeah, we got several other Porter questions. The Sporting Clinic says, is it Porter's tactics or just a bad roster incapable of executing tactics? He won MLS Cup 4 years ago. I think he has some indication on what to do. He is not Bruce Arena. He might not know how to handle having a roster of very mid players. He needs talent out there.
Yeah, it could be both. And I will say this about Porter, too. What I worry about a little more is not so much his tactical knowledge, even though that was my key takeaway, and I think he mishandled this game. I think Caleb Porter is going to try new things and see how it works out. And I get long-term, you know, not to, you know, freak out kind of like I did at the beginning. You know, I'm not going to do that every single week. So I don't hate his, I mean, well, wait, let me pause here. I freak out because this was a really important game and they didn't show up. I think there's going to be times throughout this year where Caleb Porter is going to readjust and tweak some things and whatever. And for a typical MLS game, that's fine. I just want to kind of expand on that point because I know I'm not articulating well, but I think his tactical knowledge is fine. And he'll, you know, he has the potential to figure it out. What I worry more is kind of his man management and maybe rubbing players the wrong way, because it seems like our goalkeeper is being, you know, buried in real time here. And he's what, a month or two into his tenure with the Revolution. So it seems like our goalkeeper is, you know, halfway into the grave. So yeah, I don't know. I'm Porter. I think his personality with the players and, you know, his comment about some players not being on the bus, I'm a little worried about that locker room not exactly wanting to play for Caleb Porter more than I am about his coaching ability.
Yeah, I think that's all a very fair point. At the same time, I'm a little worried about both right now. And, you know, you point, it was the questioner pointed to, well, winning for MLS Cup 4 years ago. You know, he has won MLS Cup twice with two different teams, and then the next season has been a disaster. So, you know, you kind of hope that he would win an MLS Cup with the Revs, maybe, and you know, then you'd find someone else to take over. But, you know, maybe he's just going to start off with a disaster with the Revs.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, let's go with that.
Andy J. Cook says, it's all over and I am done with Caleb Porter. It's pretty much the same team Bruce had, and the Revs would have been more competitive if Bruce were still here.
Comment.
I agree.
good comment. By the way, Sean, do we need to bring back Masterclass interim head coach Clint Pie?
Yeah, I don't know about that one, but you know, is Tommy Sowen still available?
Led us to the Champions Cup. Just saying.
Mike Kennedy asks, is Charlotte a must win if for confidence alone? Obviously there's a lot of games left, but the Revs really need to build some momentum.
Yeah, not must win in the sense of if they lose this game, they're out of the playoffs, must win, but must win in terms of this is a really good time to turn your season around. This is right now the low point so far of 2024. And, you know, we talked going into that Chicago game, you have a full week off. You have an inferior opponent coming in. I shouldn't say inferior opponent, but you have a team not projected to make the playoffs coming into Gillette, and they're missing Shaqiri. All right, well, you came away with a draw. Another game here, probably a non-playoff team, not one of the better teams in the East, coming in. It's a home game. You need something to turn your season around. So this is kind of like a back-to-back, you know, MLS game that you can really start to get some momentum going in your way. If you're not able to get 3 points here, it feels like the spiral is just going to keep going down, 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 down. So it's a must win in terms of, I think, giving everyone kind of a momentum lift and getting the monkey off their back and maybe, you know, catching up a little bit in the standings. So I think it's a must win in that respect.
Yeah, it's absolutely a must win because you look at the Revs schedule, you know, they have this game against Charlotte. This is on paper a winnable game. Then they have to travel to Mexico City for, you know, a game that's going to be a loss, and that doesn't, you know, it's irrelevant at this point, but it's going to be a tough trip. Then they're on the road against New York, then they're on the road at Toronto, then they're at home against Miami, then they're on the road again Chicago, and on the road again Red Bull. So they have the 5 of the next 6 games on the road after this one, and their one home game is against Inter Miami, who, if everyone plays, you know, should beat the Revs. So if they don't win this game, it's hard to see them winning any of those games. So to me, it's for confidence purposes, it's absolutely a must win. And, you know, it's too early to call things a must win for the playoffs, but, you know, if you look at the upcoming schedule, it might be a must win for the playoffs, even though it's only April.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you can't beat Chicago and Charlotte at home, what does that say about your team?
Right.
You know, I mean, after, you know, we can only do the small sample size game for so long until we're like, hey, I think this is who they are, you know, and that's, you know, if you can't beat potential non-playoff teams at home, you're probably a non-playoff team.
Yeah. And the schedule just gets harder. So,
yeah.
Yeah. When now, or I don't know when the first one actually happens.
Yeah. And I'll say it one more time. You know, I am way more concerned about drawing Chicago at home than I was in that 4-1, you know, road loss in Atlanta. I wish the Revs would play tough teams on the road when they're doing their Champions Cup, because those games are probably going to be losses or tough battles anyway. You know, if you get losses, if you lose early in the season, that's fine. If it's a tough schedule, that's great. If you start dropping points to weaker opponents, then we have a problem. And so, you know, if they play Toronto and Chicago and Charlotte, who are 3 teams that missed the playoffs last year, I know Toronto is much better this season, but, and if they get 2 points out of those games, I mean, that seems like the Revs have problems.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. Big John says pain.
A lot of pain.
don't know what you have to add to that. Revs Ball Knower says, when Carlos Heel and Matt Polster are at their worst, like tonight, Revs have no chance. There's a heavy reliance on them to be effective, and they just haven't been good enough in any game against real competition. Quite concerned.
Yeah, agree with that statement. And I will say, the last time Revs Ball Knower sent in a question, he was wrong about something, and he said, I guess I don't know ball. So, I agree with this comment, so I just want to say some redemption here. Revs Ball Knower does, in fact, know ball. Good job.
Yep. Yeah, I completely agree with that, too. John Pilkington says, were we wrong about Chonkalai? Is this because of bad coaching, or does anyone care? Should I care? The list of questions goes on and on.
Yeah. I'm very confused about Chonkalai. And Tom brought up something a few weeks ago where he mentioned that Chonkalai, if you look at where he's scored, he scores in the box. And it seems like they're playing him deeper. And for me, I would want Chonkalai to be a guy that is running at defenders, taking on guys one-on-one, getting into the box, and scoring it. We saw a really good with Carlos Hill off the field, a good 5-minute stretch where the Revs looked very dangerous, and Sean Kalai was the centerpiece of that. So I mean, I think there's talent there, but the results are pretty poor. He hasn't scored yet in MLS outside of, you know, those CCC games against Independiente and Alajuelense. Really haven't seen much from him this season. And I think part of that is playing deeper, like Tom said. Maybe it seems like they're trying to use him more as kind of a chance creator and a passer, as opposed to someone getting into the box and making challenges. There were a few crosses at one point where he was making runs into the box and just the service wasn't there. So I think maybe if the service was a little better and if Carlos was sending in those crosses instead of Nacho, maybe he's going to be able to get a header home. But I'm not worried at the end of the day, because I think there has been some unluck. He's hit some bar. He's at the crossbar a couple times. You know, what comes to mind is that chip shot that hit the bar and went over. If that goes in, I think a lot of these questions go away. But certainly the dip in results and form from Sean Kalai is quite noticeable. And I would say I am mildly concerned. I think he's too talented to do this throughout the whole year. But, yeah, not happy with him.
Yeah, and he's the only player in MLS averaging 5 shots or more a game that hasn't scored yet this year. He obviously scored in the Champions Cup, but not in MLS play. And, you know, I think part of the problem is you can blame part of it on him being moved around. You know, he's played striker at times. He's playing in the middle. I think he is best out wide when he has space to take guys on. And, you know, Seth posted some clips last night. You talk about that kind of 5-minute span where he had, you know, multiple really good crosses into the box from, you know, a little bit deeper. Very, very dangerous service. His corner kick service, too, when he was taking corners, I think his corners were better than Carlos Hill's were. So I think part of this is, you know, you're putting, like you said, you're putting him in the middle, expecting him to kind of create from deeper. I think he does a lot better on the wing when he has space and can cut inside and can score that way. And then can also, as you saw in this game, put some nice crosses into the box. So I'm definitely getting worried about him. But I do think that you can give him a little bit of an excuse because Caleb Porter has been kind of moving around the pitch into places where maybe he's not at his best.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see what they do when Dylan Barrero comes out. If Frioni is still struggling, you know, is he now your number 9 single striker up top with Barrero on one side and Esmer and Nacho on the other? Because it seems like Caleb Porter really likes Nacho, and you're going to need to get Esmer some minutes. So, you know, if you move him up top, you free up a wing and you're getting him into the box where he's a little bit more lethal. So it'll be interesting to see if that's going to be a potential long-term solution.
Kyle Ekstrom on Twitter says, how long is the leash for important people in this organization? Caleb Porter, Kurt Nofo, even Carlos Hill. I feel like we play better, or I feel like we play more as a team without Carlos.
Well, Carlos Hill just signed an extension, so he's probably here for a while. Now, the good news is, and if you look at the GM survey from The Athletic, 3 GMs or chief sporting officers feel he is the best player in the league, not named Leo Messi. I think 3 GM/chief sporting officers said he is the best midfielder in MLS. So if you wanted to move on from Carlos Hill, you can. There will be a team that has a DP spot open up in the summer or next year in the offseason that would happily take Carlos Hill. Now, you will take a PR hit from the fans who are not, you know, if you're a wooden spoon contender and you trade away arguably your best player in franchise history, I don't think that's a great look. So I think he is staying for a few years, just, you know, for marketing purposes, even if performance dips here. With that being said, in terms of Anolfo and Porter, we're talking about, you know, if we continue to slide, you know, I think a coaching change in the summer isn't out of the question. Anolfo, truth be told, should go with Porter if Porter goes. I do not think that is the case. I think Anolfo has a little bit of leash because of his time as the technical director and building up the academy. And I think the other thing, too, is that Anolfo is not well-liked amongst the fans. Bologna press conference, just kind of the way he rubs people the wrong way. I think because he's been there with the team for a long time, there is some trust between him and Brian Bolello. And so I think he is a little bit more safe. And I think he will also get a couple of windows here to turn things around. And I know Den Dunn will send in the question about, you know, if Will Anolfo be fired after 20 games, so that'll answer that one. But I think Porter goes first and is set up to be the fall guy if things go wrong, whereas Anolfo will have a little bit more time. And if Anolfo goes, I think Bolello, with the stadium stuff going on, is safe for now. But, I mean, to me, this strikes me, this Porter situation, if he ends up leaving, and if he's a massive failure, you know, this strikes me as a situation where, similar to how Burns went out the door when Friedel came in, you know, I think Anolfo, you know, should also take the fall if Porter does not work out. But I think he'll get a second coaching hire. Yeah, that's kind of where I stand. So Porter first, then Anolfo, and Carlos Hill is here for good.
I agree with everything you just said. And I also wouldn't go as far as to say that, you know, the team, I think you know, look at the Ala Valencia game, you look what happened here, you could say, oh, well, the team plays better without Carlos Hill. I think it's a step too far. He's still the Revs' best player, and they need to find a way to make the team play better overall. But I think that includes Carlos Hill. I think they need him. So I don't think there's any leash on Carlos Hill. I agree. I think Porter is the first to go. I think if he goes, it should be with Anolfo, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think the leash on Anolfo is far longer than it probably should be. So yeah, I think you got it quite right there.
I will say on Carlos Hill, I think there is, I mean, he just signed an extension, so I can't imagine he's going to come and ask for a trade. But I do think that there is, if there's something at the end of the year that happens, if there's another coaching change, maybe Carlos doesn't want to deal with that. Or maybe, you know, maybe there's a team, preferably in the Western Conference, that you could trade him to and get some allocation money and open up a Disney. But like, there is a path where, you know, everything falls into place and, you know, maybe Carlos wants to leave. And if Carlos wants to leave, you know, are you going to really run him out there and have him give, you know, half-assed efforts? Or are you going to try to maximize the value? You know, I think there is a potential of that happening, but I think that's a long, long way from you know, where we are right now. I think there's gonna have to be a lot of changes up top before we get to Carlos Hill saying, okay, I want out of this mess, because he just re-upped for another 2 years.
Oh, I completely agree with that, but I think that's a situation where he wants out, not that he's being forced out.
Agreed.
I think that's the only situation where that happens. Jordan Nunez on Twitter says, not really a question, but I don't know how anyone expected us to get any sort of result in this game. Porter hasn't been great, obviously, but I'm willing to see what happens now that he can just focus on the league before hitting the panic button. Club America are a much bigger club.
Yeah, I mean, I touched on this earlier. I'm not surprised they lost. They're getting knocked out by Club America. I am appalled at the end result and how they approached this game and how they played. And again, they should not be getting smashed 4-0, because other good MLS teams would not get smashed 4-0 at home with a week and a half of rest against Club America on 3 days rest. A good MLS team would not have this result. So the reason why people might expect that they would not get absolutely embarrassed is because some people, you know, myself included, thinks this isn't a wooden spoon contender. This is a potential playoff team. But they didn't play like a playoff team yesterday. So that's the logic. And again, the odds reflected that. So yeah. Yeah, it's just really, really poor.
Yep. Nothing to add there. Even Pineda said, which Club American player impressed you the most tonight? And any thoughts on the yellow smoke that engulfed the stadium?
Like the yellow smoke? You know, I don't mind. Some people were complaining that, you know, oh, the fans are embarrassing the rest of it. Of course, you know, they're one of the most popular teams in North America. You know, I'm not mad about it. It was a pretty cool atmosphere. And I think that's something that, I think if you're a Revolution fan, you should hope that someday you aspire to be that. I know that there's a long way to go. But what an absolutely great atmosphere. And I like the smoke. You know, for a few minutes, I couldn't see anything happening on the field. And that was probably as a Revolution fan, you know, they're almost doing me a favor by not letting me see what was happening on the field. In terms of who impressed yesterday, I thought Henry Martin, I'm going to botch every single player's name. I apologize. I was really impressed with him. Zendaya, I'm going to mispronounce every single name, but
Zendejas.
Yeah, I mean, that second goal, I mean, boy, not many people can make Dave Romney look like a traffic cone, but man, what a phenomenal finish there. And I also thought Melagon had, you know, he wasn't called into a lot of moments, especially in the first half, but I thought in the second half there, had a really nice save on what would have been a fabulous own goal, tipping the ball over the bar. Just seemed to be in complete control of the net. I mean, very, very solid keeper, just a really good performance. Apparently he is potentially in the Club America fans want him, think he should deserve a call up to the Mexican national team. Which I thought was interesting. I thought he played pretty well when he was called into action. Just seemed like a very, very stable goalkeeper and a really, really just phenomenal game. So really everyone impressed me. And I think Caleb Porter made a comment after the game. It's like having 11 designated players on their team. But yeah, just impressed overall front to back with that entire squad. So,
yeah, I think you named a lot of the names I was thinking of. You know, Martin was fantastic. I think he caused the Revs a lot of problems. Zendejas, as a guy that's played for the U.S. national team, is committed to the U.S. national team. It was if you're looking for a spin on it, it was nice to see him do well. Although I think there's, despite the fact he had 7 caps last year, there's still a lot of kind of depth in front of him for him to get more minutes. But if he plays like that, maybe he deserves more of a look. And A.M. Malagon at the end of the game, he didn't have much to do until the end, but he made it, 3 fantastic saves or 2 fantastic saves. I think the Chonkele shot that he spilled wide for a corner, maybe he could have done a little bit better with. But overall, I thought he was fantastic late in the game. But yeah, just generally, fantastic performance from that team. And of course, Brian Rodriguez, coming on late and scoring a goal, how big of a player he was for LAFC back in the day. And now he's a bench player for America doing that. It's just overall a very, very impressive team. A lot of guys deserve a lot of credit for that performance from Club America.
And pretty much everyone on the back line too. I mean,
oh yeah. Calderon too, who scored the goal. He seemed pretty much unbeatable by the Revs. Credit all around.
Just flawless in the back line, really. You really had to earn it. Just really, really strong team all the way around. I will also say, too, I think this is probably the greatest discrepancy between a Revolution goalkeeper and an opponent's goalkeeper that we've seen in the last decade, just between the performance on the other side and the performance in our net from Earl Edwards. So, yeah, that was maybe if you switch goalkeepers, maybe we come away with a tie.
Yeah, and it's just quickly on the back line, too. There were a lot of times where the Revs were trying to press them, and they never seemed fazed by it. So yeah. It was you could tell the difference in the passing out of the back too between the Revs and Club America. That was quite stark. Alan Garcia says, I have to ask, is this a normal pattern by a Caleb Porter team? Start off pretty bad and at some point it all comes together. Are we past that point? If so,
you mentioned earlier, I think it's the second year they win the MLS Cup. Is that the pattern?
I think usually it's the second year and then the third year they're terrible.
Okay. Yeah. So right now we are on track because I think outside of his MLS Cup years, I don't think he's made the playoff. I think he's made the playoffs only another once or twice. So this is actually the Caleb Porter experience. Am I right?
It is the Caleb Porter experience. Usually they build up the first two seasons, win MLS Cup, and then they fall off a cliff.
Yeah, buckle up.
So we'll see.
Yep. I will take that Caleb Porter experience. If that's what we're building to, okay, let's do it.
Yeah, it'll be frustrating, but giving a team that's never won an MLS Cup, if that's what it ends up as, I think people will take it. Right now, not feeling too good about that.
Can you imagine Caleb Porter getting called in to be fired, and he's like, "You don't understand, we're gonna win MLS Cup. I do this everywhere. Trust me." Well, the results are terrible. Like, yeah, it's going to plan. You got to wait for people to underestimate you, and then boom. Caleb Porter magic.
DC on Twitter says, I post this dumb snapshot all the time, but truly this roster is unbalanced. We lack pace at forward and in the middle of the park. Speed can be offset by skill, but we don't have that. We are truly slow in transition. Lack of tactical integrity. We look lost. No movement off the ball.
Yes. And this screenshot is the 20 game Anolfo thing, which I've talked about a million times. And I'm on the podcast again, so it's the same answer. Anolfo, I imagine, is getting till the end of the year, regardless of results, even though I think Porter and Anolfo should be tied together. I think Porter will be the fall guy first if we have a complete disaster of a season.
But Greg Barrero is coming back potentially at the end of April, and that's basically like a new signing, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And don't forget Brandon Bye is coming back, and it's right back is really all the and Barrero. Yeah. Those are the only two issues. Yep.
I mean, if they come back as the players they were, we'll add some pace. I'll give it that.
Yeah, then the play-in game might be back in question. That's right. I also say I'm not completely. I don't think the Revs are at the wooden spoon contender yet. I want to wait till the Charlotte game until we hit. If we're on the panic button meter, I think we're at like a 9 right now. I'll hit the panic button if they don't win this weekend.
Yeah, I agree. Ryan DePlesia says, "Is it the players? Is it the coach? What has happened to this team who started out 2023 so well? I mean, I know a lot has happened to the team, but geez, a far cry from the beginning of 2023.
So a few things here I want to point out, because I think some people remember 2023 as the Revs were some sort of juggernaut that were incredible, right? Not really. They were at the top of the East. They were a second seed. But no, I mean, they still didn't look flawless. Vrioni still struggled at scoring, and that was kind of covered up from Bobby Wood. Georgi Petrovic was phenomenal. He is gone, so certainly you've lost a lot in terms of goalkeeping. But that 2023 team, I remember, I think we got some questions about if they were as good as the Supporters Shield winning team in 2021, and the answer is that was no. They still were not as good as they were a couple of years before. They still had some flaws, and they still had to make some improvements in their roster. And not only did they not make improvements to the roster, but they've lost a few pieces. We mentioned Barrero being out. We mentioned Brandon Baye being out. Georgi Petrovic is now gone. You know, this team is a year older. Some players have regressed a little bit, and they haven't really made any improvements anywhere. So, you know, I think part of it is they've lost some players. Part of it is some players have gotten worse. And also, I think, truth be told, I think the average Revolution fan, at least from what I see on social media, talk about the beginning, and maybe the people in the organization do this too, because it seems like they're trying to double down on the team, the first half of the team for 2023. But that team wasn't, you know, MLS Cup favorites by any stretch of the imagination. So I think it's kind of a combination of, you know, we've gotten worse, and also, you know, they weren't what they were in 2021 in the first place. But I think people kind of look back to, you know, at those good times as they were, as if they were some sort of unbeatable squad. They were a good team in the East, but they still would have, you know, they were not MLS Cup favorites by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, you there's a lot of things that have changed since then. You know, Brandon Baye being out is a big factor. Losing Gustavo Bow, losing Georgi Petrovic, you mentioned. Bobby Wood started last season on fire. Bobby Wood started this season hurt. You know, that's not going to be replicated. So, you know, despite the fact that Vioni maybe wasn't performing last year either, they had Bobby Wood doing well. And then when Bobby Wood started to trail off, then Gustavo Bow got healthy, and Gustavo Bow was scoring goals. So, yeah, I mean, the roster is not as good as it was last year. You're also right to bring up that the team wasn't necessarily as good as their record last year. They were getting blown out in some games. You know, LAFC beat them 4-0. They lost 3-0 to Philadelphia. They lost to Inter Miami when Inter Miami was bad, before they signed all those guys. You know, they weren't a perfect team by any stretch. They weren't blowing out teams generally. They had a lot of draws. They had some big losses. They were in second place. You can't deny that. But, you know, after losing Brandon Baye, after losing Georgi Petrovic, you know, that they weren't a team that even with Bruce Arena, I think, was going to look like a cup contender. So, yeah, everything you said, I agree with there. And as far as what's changed this year, it is both the roster has gotten worse and the coaching has gotten worse.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
My old Bill Davidson said, before the match, I thought, or at least hoped, 0-0 or 1-1 was possible. Four unanswered goals later, I realized that was very unrealistic. I think the Revs have a decent roster this season, but they're not playing well together. Can Caleb Porter turn it around?
Yeah, well, again, I don't think it was unrealistic to think that maybe they could squeeze out a 1-1 draw. I think just this approach was poor. And yeah, what was the question? I forget the question.
Can Caleb Porter turn it around?
Maybe. I mean, yeah, he can turn around, and maybe Caleb Porter magic is just going to take effect in 2025. But I don't know. I mean, I worry about that locker room. Let's make another Brad Friedel comparison. Brad Friedel walks in. He's got the Lee Wynn situation. He's got a bit of a divided locker room because of that. And, you know, he came in kind of as, you know, he's Mike Burns' roommate in college. You know, he was coming off the street. This is his first MLS head coaching job, his first head coaching job in general. I don't think he, you know, as someone going into their first job, he walked into a very tough situation, a bit of a toxic locker room, and truth be told, lost the locker room in record time, right? I mean, it took only a few months before it seemed like the locker room had kind of turned on him. So Porter is walking into a situation where I'm not sure the locker room trusts the organization after the Bruce Arena situation. So Porter is coming in. I think Porter is trying to put his stamp on the locker room, and, you know, we already have questions about, you know, people not being on the bus. And, you know, I think that until they start winning, there's questions. And when you look at this lineup on paper, and when you say this team should not be getting their ass kicked 4-0 at home, and then they get their ass kicked 4-0 at home, you have to ask questions of, like, you know, are there guys that don't want to be here? Are there guys that, you know, is this locker room A-okay? Have they truly moved on? I think that's a real question. So I think, in a normal situation, yeah, I think Caleb Porter is a good coach. He's won 2 MLS Cups. He's obviously, you know, knows what he's doing. But I worry about the locker room dynamics right now. And if, you know, if they continue to lose, and if they, you know, spend the majority of the first few months losing throughout 2024, are they going to be able to recover? Is that going to be a locker room where they're able to come together as a team? I do not know. I truly do not know if that is possible for Caleb Porter or anyone to do, in, for that matter.
Yeah, let's switch from the negative to the even more negative. Pine and Granite FFC says, if the Crafts continue to be uninvested or interested and the stadium falls through, how long until the Revs fold and fall into obscurity behind new incoming and recent USL teams in New England?
Well, they won't fold. They won't fold. MLS will protect them. Did Raising Anchor send this in? Boy, US, I don't think they'll ever fall behind USL teams. And that's not to take a shot at Hartford or RIFC, who Hartford has turned it around a little bit this year. They seem to be on the up and up. And RIFC has obviously done a great job building up their fan base. I believe their second home game is coming up this weekend. So hopefully they have some good weather for that and pack Bryant University again. But I do not think there will ever be a situation in which they will fall behind USL or fold for that matter. Maybe relocate. Maybe that's a worst case scenario. But, it's unfortunate because for the Crafts, this is, you know, a moneymaker that they don't really need to put a lot of energy into. Bilal kind of runs it. You know, it makes a little bit of money. It fills some dates for Gillette Stadium. When motocross is in town, they can screw up their schedule for them. By the way, have we talked about the fact that MLS Cup was scheduled for the Army-Navy game last year? Do you realize if the Revs were to host MLS Cup, we would have forfeited that leg. We would have just played an away game. We would have given whoever we played in MLS Cup a road game. So I realized that after the fact. I don't know if we've brought that up on the podcast, but, you know, Kraft can kind of just, you know, sit on it and whatever. It's a little side thing for him that he can pay attention to whenever something big happens. And, truth be told, if they get a stadium, then you might have some potential investment groups looking to buy it from Kraft. Because, you know, no one's interested in buying an MLS team without a home, right? I don't think anyone wants to buy the Revolution and then lease Gillette Stadium back from Robert Kraft. So, you know, I think best case scenario, if we're trying to get away from the Kraft Sports Group ownership, is you're looking at relocation or you need a stadium either by Kraft or by someone.
Yeah, I mean, the team's not folding. It's any major league needs a team in the Boston area. And Kraft has invested so much in the league over the years so I agree with everything you said. But I do want to, I think this is a good transition to a different question we got, because you did seemingly acknowledge that Hartford is part of New England. Our good friend Jake Catney says, is Revolution Recap ready to bow down to the greatest team in New England, the UConn Huskies men's and women's basketball teams?
Well, first off, UConn women, they are not getting past South Carolina. South Carolina is winning the women's tournament, and it's not even a question. Everyone's talking about Caitlin Clark. Everyone's talking about Kim Mulkey. Everyone's talking about UConn. Nope, it's going to be South Carolina. The UConn men have entered the conversation in terms of potentially the greatest college basketball team of all time to win a NCAA championship and then roll that over into an even more dominant team. I mean, I know they were a 4 seed last year, but I mean, what an incredible team. They played in one of the toughest conferences, only 3 losses. I know there were some bad losses against some other Big East teams, but a 30-0 run on Illinois, who is no slouch. I think they might win every game by double digits in the tournament, but I think it's even more than that. I know Villanova did that a few years ago, but I think they might be, I think they're going to win every game by like 15 or 20 or something like that. I mean, and they're 12-point favorites coming up against Alabama, which is like the spread you see for like a 3-14 game. What an absolutely insane team they got down there in stores. So Connecticut is part of New England when UConn basketball is good. When UConn basketball sucks, when they're like in the American Athletic Conference or whatever, they're not part of New England. But right now, Connecticut is part of New England, so congratulations to Jake.
How can we call them the best team in New England when they are afraid to play the Bryant men's Bulldogs team?
That is true. We don't know who's better until they play Bryant. UConn is destroying everyone on their way to the NCAA, and everyone on Bryant is entering the transfer portal. For the people that don't know, Bryant's head coach made the comment. They played like Springfield College or something last year, and someone asked them why they're playing a D3 team. And they're like, well, some teams don't want to play us. There's a team not far away that decided to take another state school in New England, and I guess they just didn't want to play us. And it was, you know, UNH was playing UConn that day, and so it was a clear shot at UConn. And then, like, Dan Hurley went out in his next press conference, like, didn't Bryant lose to Brown? Like, why are they calling us out? So, yeah, I don't know if I don't necessarily want to see a Bryant-UConn matchup next year, because it's a bit of a rebuild for us, and UConn looks like they're going to be very good for a, even if they have to rebuild and lose some players to the NBA. I mean, Dan Hurley, man, whew, what a program they got there.
We will get back to the negative, but we do have one more non-negative comment from David Sibillion. On the bright side, we have a new render for a stadium. Thoughts?
Yeah, so we talked about this a few years ago when I think the first mention of Everett going into a bill in the state happened. And I think at the time I didn't understand how politics happened, but I said, yeah, we're about the 40-yard line. I think, right, you know, and I thought that really just required a governor's signature and then we'd move on and ended up being taken out of the bill. So I misunderstood that. But, you know, right now I think we're at about the 30, 35-yard line. There's still a long way to go, but it seems like this has local support. It seems like this has support at the state level. It seems like this is being kind of pitched as, you know, Everett needs a demand driver that generates revenue for the city, and they feel that this is a good opportunity. This isn't the Revs finding a piece of land and fighting off developers for it. This is Everett and the Revs having very strong mutual interest in redeveloping a parcel. And the other thing I will say is that Everett does not want this thing to sit there vacant for 20 years. They want to get a move on. So we don't know what the timeline is. I believe there is a vote to move forward in May or something. Hayden Bird of the Boston Globe had a very, very good thread of tweets on this on Twitter. So go follow Hayden Bird and go find that if you can. But this is something it seems like there is very strong interest to get this done from a lot of different angles. I know there are going to be some groups that will oppose it. And I think the public transportation is going to be an issue with the lack of parking. And I'm curious if Mayor Wu steps in and makes some public comments against this and tries to influence this to be a no, because it seems like she does not really like this. But all things considered, this seems to be the Revs' best chance and potentially their last chance to get something done. So renderings look great. Very positive on the potential of this, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, you mentioned some valid criticism. I think the parking's an issue. 75 spaces. I don't think that's realistic. I think the public transportation's an issue. They need to do a lot better there. You know, they need to build that bridge from Assembly, which is still going to be a bit of a hike to get to this stadium from there. There's a talk of a Silver Line stop, which I don't think, I mean, helps, but it doesn't solve the problem. So yeah, that's certainly an issue. It's a tough area to get to currently. And they need to fix that. But I think the biggest selling point for this, you know, is what we heard them say at this hearing. You know, nobody else wants this land. It's a derelict power plant. It's kind of a wasteland that's just going to continue to sit there. There haven't been other options. You know, you look at some of the other plots of land that the Revolution have looked at, they've been much more desirable pieces of land where, you know, maybe somebody does want to go in and build housing. Maybe somebody wants to build, you know, some other mixed use. Here, if we believe what they're telling us, it's the only option. And I think that's a very compelling argument if you're trying to convince the politicians that it makes sense to have them do this and tear down this derelict power plant and, you know, build something nicer and there's no other option. That's a compelling argument.
Yeah. And one thing, too, about the public parking is that, you know, a lot of this fan base that's existing is probably suburban, probably southern New England. And I think if you don't figure out a reasonable parking solution, you are going to really struggle. I would guess, you know, I don't know what the parking situation is at Wynn Casino, but maybe they are able to, you know, come to some sort of agreement where fans can park in a certain section of their parking and shuttle over or something to that effect. But you know, the lack of parking is a big issue, and I'm a little, it's being made an issue, but I think it's a bigger issue than it seems like a really big issue, and I'm kind of surprised it's just kind of like a bit of a footnote, at least on social media, because it's 75 spaces. Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, and just I don't want to spend too much time on this because we're going long. But I, you know, I've seen people point to the Garden or to Fenway. You know, if I want to go to a Celtics game this weekend and park, which is exactly what I'm going to do, I can go on Spot Hero before the game and find one of a dozen, you know, different parking garages in the area. That's a quick walk to the stadium. This is not the case for this land. So I don't really buy the argument that there's no parking at the Garden or Fenway. You know, there's not a ton of parking at Fenway, but there's enough parking. You can find a spot if you're willing to pay. You can definitely find a spot around the Garden anytime you want to park there if you're willing to pay. It might cost me $80 to park there, but I can find a spot. There's plenty of garages. That is not the case for this location, and I do think that 75 spaces is not going to cut it without there being other options around the stadium. And I know part of the original plan specifically said they can't park at Encore Casino, and that was, I think, part of the things that they had to say or something. So there are legitimate concerns.
Well, and the thing too is Fenway, you know, the Red Sox fan base has always dealt with the lack of parking around Fenway, right?
And it's much more accessible by public transit. There's commuter rail line stops there. Every single Green Line goes by Kenmore.
But I'm just saying, even if you're saying, well, the other sports teams are inconvenient to get to, okay, but you have a, you know, that those fan bases have been urban, or they're used to taking public transportation and getting to those places, or driving in and parking downtown. You know, the suburban fan base is going from parking at Gillette Stadium, which is relatively easy, to driving through a city, you know, going to Everett. So you're going to lose some fans there. And then also, is the urban fan base going to take the Silver Line up? If public transportation isn't convenient, and you're asking, you know, an urban fan base to try out something new and go to an urban, you know, a new location, is that a one-for-one trade-off? Or are you going to, you know, alienate your existing fan base and then, you know, not really get, you know, as big of a response as you do? So I think you either need the parking or you need very convenient public transportation. So one of those two things is going to have to come along.
Yeah, the Silver Line is a glorified bus line. So it's not it's better than nothing, but you got to need more than that.
Yes.
And the other thing too, with Fenway and the Garden, is you can walk there from all sorts of places. You can't really walk to the stadium from anywhere particularly convenient. You're not walking to Everett from BU or Northeastern like you are to Fenway. So yeah.
Yes. My guess is they'll build some more parking garages around there. That'll be brought up, and I imagine there'll be some parking garages somewhere on that site that helps the issue.
There's gonna have to be.
Yeah.
All right, back to the negative. Fern 77 says, we were pretty outclassed on and off the field. We give the team a lot of criticism. Fans took an L today too. We just saw being a fan of a team needs to look like. Doesn't matter if the game starts at 9. Meanwhile, Revs are throwing foam boxes from 10 feet from the stands.
Hey, those boxes are cardboard. Get it right, Fern. No, pretty cool. I think they should allow smoke. So when the Revs are losing 2 or 3-0, that they cover it up so the people on TV don't have to watch. I think that is something we have to aspire to. If the game's going poorly, just drop some smoke bombs so no one can see what's happening. I think that's great. I think that's a great idea, and I agree with this comment.
I do have to jump on the smoke because I didn't respond earlier. I didn't mind it in this game when the Revs were losing and you couldn't see the field and see what was happening. If this was happening in like the 20th minute of a competitive game, I would be less thrilled by the smoke bombs blocking the view. I also saw people complaining about how bad it smelled. I was not in the stand, so I didn't get to smell it. It looks cool late in a game when your team is losing and you don't want to see the field. I don't think I would like that every game. But No, I was very impressed with the Club America fans. I think they deserve all the credit in the world. They brought a great atmosphere. There were probably at least 10 times as many of them as there were Revs fans at this game. At the same time, you know, you have the last place team in MLS. They're playing a game. They're probably going to lose. It's raining out. I can't say I'm shocked that the Revs attendance was not great. Revs attendance from Revs fans was not great for this game. And I think the hope is when you have a team in the city that, you know, maybe your fan base has changes a little bit and it's less reliant on families and more reliant on, you know, maybe diehards that are showing up to these games. And I think that is the long-term hope with an in city stadium, right?
Yeah. But, and again, too, having this fan base come here, I don't mind it because, as this comment said, I know this is a shot at Revolution fans, but it's what we should aspire to be. We shouldn't be, you know, throwing boxes from the fort. We should be looking at, you know, drums and music and incorporating those, you know, a more authentic soccer culture and bringing in those people, because that's a fun atmosphere. I've seen comments from Revs fans saying the game sucked, but it was fun hearing the other fans. And again, I think it's different if this is an MLS rival or a playoff game or a game where you have a little bit more expectations, you know, because I don't think, you know, as I say, I think some people are kind of accepting of this loss as opposed to angry. I know there is a lot of anger, but I think a lot of fans are accepting. And I think it's kind of just a cool experience to see something different. We saw it in the League's Cup a little bit last year, too. The League's Cup would draw, I think, 8,000 or 9,000 fans, but it was a loud crowd. So I think that's just something that we need to aspire to. And maybe over time we will get there. It's just, you know, we're just not there yet. We're not one of the most popular teams in North America.
Shark on Twitter says, I'm embarrassed. I've been a season ticket holder since 2014. This is the worst game I've seen. Fans didn't show up. Team didn't show up. When can we call for Caleb to be fired?
Yeah, covered a lot of that. Agree with most of that. Is this one of the most embarrassing games since 2014? Atlanta 7-0 comes up. I think this was one of the biggest games, so it's really a disappointing game. But yeah, I think if you're embarrassed, that's fine. I don't know if I'd call this one of the most embarrassing games over the last 10 year. I'd have to think about that. But the 5-0 back-to-back games, Philadelphia, Chicago, that ended the Friedel era, I think was more embarrassing. The 7-0 game that effectively ended the Heaps era was, I'd say, more embarrassing. Even the playoff loss to NYCFC, I don't know if that's technically embarrassing, but I think that was more disappointing that the season ended that way. So, but yeah, this is up there, but probably not the most embarrassed, I think, as a Revolution supporter you should be.
Yeah. Tail Forever says, I am all for experimentation, but must we try a radically different formation against such a good team in such an important game? He also notes that he's been trying to do this in FIFA because it looks cool, but he seems to have struggled, and he thought the problem was that he was bad at video games.
Caleb Porter needs to try this on FIFA and realize it doesn't work in real life. So, yeah, I agree with this comment. Covered it already. I don't think we need to spend too much more time on it because I know we're running long. But, yeah, agree 100%. Nice comment, Teal Forever.
He also says, Revs played really poorly, but MLS just can't keep up with the top end of Liga MX. Why is there such a disparity?
Roster rules, effectively. Yep. And this is kind of what is spurring the rumored rules for MLS to kind of keep going and add two more U22 spots. It is no coincidence that the talk of MLS, giving more resources to teams, it is no coincidence that is happening during the Champions Cup play. And with Leagues Cup, there's going to be, MLS teams playing Mexican teams every single year. I think MLS really uses Liga MX as the measuring stick and wants to win those competitions. So it comes down to roster rules where, and Caleb Porter made a comment, it's like having 11 designated players where they just have quality up and down their roster. They don't have as many limitations. So, it comes down to MLS roster rules. One, we're structured for more parity, where teams can't spend an unlimited amount of money, it's basically a soft cap. So, one, there's that. But two, the roster rules don't expand fast enough to catch up to other leagues in the world, because there are owners that say, why would we spend more money? We're making a lot of money as it is. The valuations of these franchises are going up. Why would we expand these roster rules? So when MLS does expand the rules and try to increase the talent on the team and increase what GMs can do, they are often minor or not big enough, because there is a collection of owners that really are bottom line driven and think they're going to make money regardless of whether or not they win Champions Cup or Leagues Cup. And they'd rather just have the money than have the status throughout the world. So there's a bit of a battleship between ownership. But, yeah, it's kind of incremental, small changes over time.
Agree. And I hate excuse making after a loss, but Caleb Porter was not wrong with his comment.
I agree. I do want to say, too, I won't get into it because we're running long. But I do agree with what Caleb Porter said, where it's like having 11 designated players. Yeah, there is a very big talent discrepancy between the top teams in Mexico and MLS. That is 100% true.
Yeah. With that said, we have seen an MLS team win this CONCACAF Champions Cup now, so it is doable. Last two questions. John Trainer says, who would you rather see in goal next match, Edwards, Ravas, or Jackson?
Ravas. Edwards, I don't want to see again. I don't mean to be mean to Edwards, but he's not a young player. He's signed to be the number two. I want to see more out of Ravas. I know he's made mistakes. I know he's been inconsistent, but we need to see what we have in him before we completely discard him. Like a Thomas Vatsleek. We also spent a transfer fee on him. So, let's see what he has. I'm curious if we see Ravas next game. And I think Porter kind of made a bit of a comment, he hasn't played in a few weeks. I'd rather see Edwards, but I didn't think Edwards was that great against Chicago. Made a pretty boneheaded error in Chicago where he lost possession and should have given up a goal. He was way out of goal on that play in the second half of the game. So Edwards, he's a backup, right? He's a backup for a reason, and you're not going to learn anything from him. If you decide Ravas sucks and this guy isn't going to work out, we need to get rid of him, but he's going to be on the roster because you used your buyout on the last goalkeeper you decided sucked and never even played, then I want to see Jacob Jackson. And even if Jacob Jackson sucks, he's a young player. I want to see if he is good enough to handle MLS. I want to see if he has a future in MLS. I know he only had 2 or 3 starts last year and they weren't great. In the playoffs, that might be, again, situational. Team just, is letting him down. But if you have a young player that you want to develop, you got to give him minutes. And he's proven everything he can at Revs 2, and you brought him back for a reason. So I'd rather see Jackson if you don't want to give Ravas a run out there, but you need to give Ravas a run out there, and we need to see what he has.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you just said there. You got to give Ravas a run. You put money into him. If he doesn't work out, you need to know now and be ready to move on from for next year. But he needs more of a run to prove it.
I will also say, too, by the way, and I don't want to go too long, but people talk about roster construction. A lot of times they talk about Tommy McNamara, right? well, you know, we re-signed Edwards last year. Like, we extended Edwards, I believe, after Bruce Arena left. And that, you know, they locked into this goalkeeper trio of Edwards, Jackson. They extended Jackson's option, and then they signed Rava. So all three of these keepers, they made the decision to keep. And we're already in May, and we're like, boy, which one of these keepers do we trust? You know, when we talk about, you know, roster construction, quote-unquote, you know, people, again, look at kind of like the more useless players or the players that aren't getting playing time. But really, you have to look at the depth of the team. And you look at all three of these keepers and you see flaws, you have to bring up questions of why were all three of these guys brought back? Why didn't we not re-sign Edwards and move up Jackson to the number two and then draft another developmental project? Or if Jackson isn't good enough, why did you extend his option? Why didn't you go out and draft another keeper and develop another keeper at Refs 2 who's a little bit younger that might be here for a longer period of time? So, yeah. Goalkeeping position is also not great right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Those are great questions. Last one, scoreline predictions. This is Randy LH on Twitter. Scoreline predictions for the Revs' upcoming loss to Charlotte.
Charlotte. Ooh, haven't actually thought about it. They should have enough time to rest and recover. One frustrating thing about this, too, is I don't know how they're going to play. You know, I was coming into this Club America game, like, you know, I figured the Revs would at least come out a little bit more aggressive, and then they did something completely different. I assume the Revs come out, have to play on the front foot, try to play establishing a lot of possession. I'll go 1-1.
That was honestly exactly my prediction. I was going to say 1-1, and I'm going to stick with it. That seems like a game where Charlotte's not very good. I don't think Charlotte's going to win, but I also think the Revs are going to disappoint and end up with a draw.
Yeah, I truth be told, I want to do a little more homework on Charlotte before I put money on it. So I'm coming up from that perspective. And if you ask me in a day, I might have a different scoreline prediction. But this strikes me as a game. The Revs have 67% possession. Charlotte packs the bus. The Revs swing balls into Vrioni or throw him some long balls that he just can't catch up to because he's not fast enough. And Charlotte gets a goal early, and then second half, basically like the Chicago game. I could see this playing out similar to the Chicago game. We're just not effective in the box, and that's going to be our downfall. But we'll get a fluke goal somehow.
Yeah, Charlotte is definitely not as good as their record. They got a win over Columbus because Columbus went down a man in the 26th minute. But otherwise, I'm not very impressed with them. At the same time, I think it's a setup for a disappointing draw. Greg, any final thoughts?
No, apologies. This ran long, and apologies to all of our listeners for a lot of long shows lately. Hey, when things are bad, our show is better. That's what I'm told. People like the misery. They like hearing us complain. So hopefully our podcast was a more enjoyable experience than the actual game.
And you can follow Greg on Twitter at RealGJohnstone. You can also follow him at the Revolution Recap account, which he does most of the tweeting from. You can follow Revolution Recap Twitter, Facebook, Instagram as well as Threads and Blue Sky. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean L. Donahue. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Also, be sure to check out our friends at the Blazing Musket. And we'll be back this weekend after the Charlotte result, regardless of what that is.